It is a nice opportunity when we have no bar bat mitzvah and so a more manageable group in the main sanctuary, especially when we have, as we do this morning, a bar mitzvah in another room, to learn and teach as opposed to a formal sermon. And I want to do that in particular because this morning's Torah reading was very traumatic for me as a child. Not because of the Torah reading itself, but because I grew up to the age of 10 in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, where I went to a yeshiva. And then I moved to Philadelphia, where I went to a day school, not unlike our own Sinai Akiba. In fact, it was called Akiba Hebrew Academy. Our Hebrew teacher used to tell us, Hebrew is our middle name, right? We loved that, as you can imagine. And the first day of the first Hebrew class of sixth grade in Akiba, our teacher said to us, your first assignment as new students in the school, because the school began at sixth grade, your first assignment is to memorize Shirat Hayam, Az Yashir, that which we read this morning. So first of all, like all kids, I really loved the idea that I had to memorize something, especially in Hebrew. Although I must say that memorizing things as a child is invaluable, and we've lost that in our school system because everybody just looks it up on the computer, which means that it isn't part of your mental furniture, and that's a shame. But at the time, I felt about it the way any 10 or 11-year-old would. But I went home, and for a couple of days, I dutifully memorized Az Yashir along with all my classmates, and then the time came where we had to go around and everyone had to recite the song at the sea. And I began like this. Az Yashir Moshe uvenei Yisrael et hashira hazos. And the teacher practically jumped out of his chair. He said, hazos? Where did you get hazos? Now, I just came from the yeshiva. Everyone said hazos. Nobody said hazot. Because as you may know, in 1948, when the state of Israel was founded, the founders wisely chose the Sephardic pronunciation, right, where the taf is always t and never s. But I had grown up in an Ashkenazi yeshiva where every morning we would say Yiskadal v'Yiskadash Shemei Rabbah. He said to me, you go back and learn it correctly. Now, I don't know if you know how hard it is when you've been trained to read a letter one way to all of a sudden read it another way. Imagine if you opened a book and you had to pronounce every S as T. But it was very hard. And I all of a sudden had to learn Torah in a new accent. And for me, this did two things. First of all, it kept Shirat Hayam in my mind forever and ever. And second, it associated it with trauma. But because of that, in part, it has occurred to me that what happened to me in one way or another happens to the Jewish people and the Torah throughout our history. And I will explain what I mean. Anybody who comes to the Thursday morning Torah classes hears this again and again and again. Because what we do is we look at ancient commentators and modern commentators. And modern commentators read the same Torah, but they read it with a different accent. That is, it's the same, but it's different. It sounds in their ears not like the Torah that we all grew up with, even though they're reading the same Torah, but it gives it a different nuance. And I want to give you an example or two before I talk about Shirat Hayam and what it means to us today. For example, as soon as the Israelites cross the sea, they start to sing. Now that makes sense. But of course, this isn't just a song. This is a very carefully structured, orchestrated piece of poetry. Nobody all of a sudden sings poetry. Unless you're like Gene Kelly or Fred Astaire, right? In musicals, all of a sudden, people will say, let's put on a show, and they'll all start to sing, and it comes out in rhyme. But if I said to you right now, sing about the best thing that ever happened in your life, it would not come out in very careful, rhyming, metered poetry. Now, why is it that Israel, all of a sudden, when it crosses the sea, starts to sing in poetry? The ancient answer is, of course, that this is all a product of revelation. And that's how God speaks through human beings, sometimes through prose, sometimes through poetry. The modern answer, which is given in part by Sarna in his book on Exodus, a very well-known modern biblical scholar, is that if you look at ancient texts, including, by the way, texts from Egypt, victories in battle are told twice, once in prose and once in poetry. And what Israel is doing is the same thing that the people around them used to do, which is retelling the story, but they're telling it in poetry. You know what the difference is between the Egyptian poems and the poem we have in the Bible, apart from the language? That the Egyptian poems celebrate the victory of the Pharaoh. The Israelite poems celebrate the victory of God. So you see, modern scholarship tells us something about the song in a new accent that deepens our understanding of Shirat Hayam. Har Nachalatcha, the mountain of your inheritance, which actually doesn't exist anywhere else in the Bible. Turns out it has a parallel in ancient Ugaritic texts where they speak about the God having a mountain of inheritance. And suddenly we realize that Israel wasn't isolated from the people around them, that just as you and I start to learn our accents from those around us, so did the Israelites. But of course, they put their own spin on it. And they spoke in poetry when they crossed the sea because poetry has a force that prose does not. There is something to poetry that stirs people in a musical way that simple prose can't. Any poem that you know in any language will convince you of that. If you paraphrase the poem in prose, that is, if I tell you in a sentence something that's given in a poem, you'll realize that it doesn't have the same force. Let me give you an example. Okay, Leigh Hunt, who is an essayist, wrote one famous poem called Rondo. Now I'm going to tell you what the poem means, and then I'm going to recite the poem. And you'll see that even though it's the same thing, the poem has a force that my telling you doesn't. This is all about a man who remembers that once he was kissed by a little girl, and even though his life hasn't been so great otherwise, the memory of that kiss can never be taken away from him. Okay? That's the entire poem. It's called Jenny. It's actually called Rondo, but it's known as Jenny. Jenny kissed me when we met, jumping from the chair she sat in. Time, you thief, who love to get sweets into your list, put that in. Say I'm weary, say I'm sad, say that health and wealth have missed me, say I'm growing old, but add, Jenny kiss me. Now you realize the poem, even though it says the same thing, has a power and a sweetness that no description can match. And the same thing is true with Shirat Hayam. In the middle of this year, we hear Amar Oyev Erdof Asig Achalek Shlal, which means the enemy said, I'll run after, I'll capture, and I'll divide up the spoils. But I remember when we were studying this, not in sixth grade, but in rabbinical school, it was pointed out to us by my teacher, Rabbi Wechsler, that if you listen to that phrase, it's supposed to mimic horse hooves coming after you. Amar Oyev Erdof Asig Achalek Shlal. You hear in the poetry what actually was going on in the world, that the horses are coming right behind you. And it's supposed to recreate the feeling of fear in the hearts of the Israelites. So the accent, the way you say it, the stress on the syllable, the way it's pronounced changes everything. Everything, everything. It's one of the reasons, by the way, why email is such a terrible way to communicate. Because you never know how the person is saying what they're saying, right? A person on email says, I don't understand that question. And it could be, I don't understand that question, or I don't understand that question, and you don't know. Because words on a page are subject to the accent you give them. And that's why you have to carefully craft words. And you have to read the Torah with a melody. And you have to read it with a song. And you have to listen to the accent. And then we can start to understand the central message of ancient and modern Torah study, which is given in Shirat Hayam. What is that message? Ze Eli V'Anvehu, Elohe Avi V'Aromamenhu. This is my God, and I will exalt him, the God of my ancestors, and I will glorify him. In other words, there are two understandings of God, the God that you inherit and the God that you discover. And both of them are brought to the Torah. When you read Shirat Hayam, you're also reading all the commentary that's contained in whatever you read and everything you've learned and everything you've been told, but then Ze Eli V'Anvehu, this is my God. V'Anvehu means, and I will glorify him, but you know what the rabbis do with that word, V'Anvehu? They say, Ani Vehu, I and God. I'm teaching a class at UCLA, and we just did Buber's I and Thou. Buber says that you have to have a direct, unmediated relationship with God, what he calls the I-Thou relationship. And here it is, right in Shirat Hayam, V'Anvehu, Ani Vehu. God and I were like this. So much so that when we cross the sea and we look up at the heavens, our words come out in poetry. And then it contains the final message. Not just the way in which you must study Torah, not only the way in which you inherit Torah and discover Torah, but also what is the ultimate fate of Torah and of human beings. Because the very first words of Az Yashir, Yashir is in what tense? Past, present, or future? Future. Future tense. But as we know, the song was sung thousands of years ago. So what do the rabbis say? The song that they sung at the sea, one day we will sing in the time to come. That poem is not only a poem of the past, but a poem of promise, of the future. That redemption is not only something that happened, and something that happens, but something that will happen. That the Shir goes all through time, past, present, and future. So in this Shir, in this song, Shir, by the way, is the Hebrew word both for song and for poetry, because singing and poetry are so intricately connected. And when you speak poetry, your voice should fall into some kind of rhythm and some kind of song. That in song and poetry, Israel not only felt the redemption and the immediate presence of God, I mean, just imagine that miracle, but also the redemption that was to come. One last point. When the redemption comes and the people sing and they finish singing, who picks up an instrument and then begins to sing not just in poetry but in music? Miriam. Right? Miriam. Now picture this scene. All of Israel crosses the sea, and they all recite the poem. Az Yashir Moshe Uvenei Yisrael. Right? Israel and Moses together sang this song. And then Miriam goes back with an instrument and, by the way, sings the same song. The same song. When Miriam begins to sing, she doesn't sing something else. She sings the song that they just sang. Because the same words with music are elevated. And Miriam begins the song for all of Israel over again. And that, to me, is the most beautiful and most poignant lesson of Shirat Hayam. Because this song is in every morning service. And we sing it again and again and again and again. with music, without music. We've never stopped singing this song. Maybe we sing it in an Ashkenazi accent. Maybe we sing it in a Sephardi accent. But the point is that the song never stops. It never stops. The light above the ark is called a Ner Tamid. And in English, we call that an eternal light. But the truth is that that light is not eternal. The bulb goes out, the electricity goes off. One day, 100 years from now, we'll refurbish the sanctuary, and we'll have to take the light out while we do the updates to the sanctuary. Synagogues close and move to other places. So how do you understand the eternal light if, in fact, it doesn't stay lit? The answer is that in the temple, Tamid didn't mean eternal, it meant regular. And in modern Hebrew, it means that too. Tamid means something that you do all the time, but not constantly, right? So Shirat Hayam, that shir, is an eternal song, but not eternal because you never stop singing it, but eternal because Israel never stops singing it, because we do it again and again and again and again, so that it goes deeper and deeper and deeper into the consciousness of our people. So that in our lives as individuals and as a people, every time we cross the sea, every time we survive, every time we are joyous, Az Yashir Moshe Ubnei Yisrael. So Moses teaches us to sing, and all of Israel sings with him. And lastly, that last point wasn't the real last point. Here's the real last point. Az Yashir, the song itself, is preceded by a very simple phrase. It says, Vayaminu Baronai v'Moshe Ya'abdo Az Yashir Moshe. Which means, the people Israel believed in God and in Moses, and then they sang. It was once they had faith that they sang. Once they believed that the words came to them. And that's the message. The message is that once you recognize the beauty, the wonder, the miraculousness, the amazement of the world, then the song just flows. And it may be that everyone in Israel sings the song with a slightly different accent. It was probably true then, I'm sure, right, that people coming out of Egypt spoke Hebrew in very different ways. And it may be true now. But it is also true that all of Israel sings the song. We all sing, right? Vayaminu Baronai v'Moshe Abdo Az Yashir. Because we believe in God, because God has saved us, not once, but again and again and again, and preserved us to this moment, both in our hearts and with our voices, both in poetry and in song, we sing to God out of praise and out of thanks. Shabbat Shalom.